Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are and whenever you are listening to this, or if you're listening to a replay, or if you're reading a transcript. It's very good to be the host of the show and greet you today and look forward to an interesting show with Wynn Free. He's out rounding up conference line, so he should be on shortly. What we do, we have a simulcast with the conference line where everyone calls in, and they're from all over the world, and then people listen on BBS radio from all over the world. We patch them in together, and so sometimes he asks questions, and sometimes he has interchange with the people on the conference line, and you people out there in BBS radio, sometimes he asks for questions where people can call into BBS radio. So it's a pleasure to be talking to you tonight, and Wynn should be with us shortly. My name's Terry Brown, and I've been working with Wynn for a lot of years. In 1995, I was studying with Cheryl Taylor, who was a police psychic and a very good psychic. She solved crimes, found lost submarines, and worked with the FBI and the police. And I got a chance firsthand to see her extraordinary qualities. One time, one of our people, Bob Nielsen, dropped his cane over the balcony and it disappeared in a flower garden. And we all went down, the students, about four of us went down. We were looking flower by flower through the flower garden trying to find his cane. She came out and asked what we were doing, and we said we were looking for his cane. She said, "Oh, that's the wrong way to do it." And she put her hand to her head and concentrated on it for a minute, and then walked over to the edge of the balcony and pointed and says, "It's right there." And that's exactly where it was. One day, my mother at the time was doing a jewelry show, and she had some lapis necklace that she had loaned me, and she asked for it back. So I was going through all my stuff, looking for it, because I knew I couldn't have lost it, only I couldn't find it. So I asked Cheryl where it could be, and the answer was, "It's in the bottom of a box in your room." So I went through all the boxes and looked at the bottom of all the boxes, and there it was in the bottom of a box. So she really had some really, really good abilities. She unfortunately isn't channeling right now. She doesn't feel that she had the energy. She got they called it an autoimmune disease, where her pineal gland was not working correctly, and her autoimmune system began to go wacko, so she gave up channeling. Hello, is Wynn here on the line yet?
You're on the line.
All right, ladies
Wynn
and gentlemen.
Wynn Free and Crew.
Wynn Free and Crew.
Remember that song, "There's a train coming"?
Yeah.
You know that song? Tina, can you sing?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't know the song.
There's a song. "There's a train coming, picking up people from coast to coast." Hi, this is Tina. Would you like to say your name and your city? Hi, this is Wynn. For those of you on BBS, welcome. You can hear our conference line is picking up people right now. People are joining us. And this is a simulcast between BBS and a conference line. And if you were high, doing a good job, Tina, you'd say, when you better start the tape the recording.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is being recorded.
All right. Monday, January 23rd. It's the big year, 2012, Winfrey, Terry Brown, and our helpers who hold the energy on the conference line. And are you guys, can you guys hear me on the conference line?
Yep.
Well, there's at least one. There's one of them, right?
Yeah.
And I picked a topic tonight. I thought of doing this for quite some time. And did you all look at the topic?
No,
thank you.
No.
No. And neither did Terry. That's good, because she would have been shivering. If she knew. Would you like to say your name and your city?
This is Cindy from Peoria.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, how are you?
Now, how's Brooklyn?
Oh, she's doing great. Doing great.
Cindy's daughter is in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think that could be a good book, you know. A girl named,
Brooklyn?
A daughter named Brooklyn, right.
Well, she's probably got enough stories to fill it.
Yes. Anyone would like to say their name in the city?
That's Chris in Memphis.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Wynn.
And anyone else?
Zoe, Sacramento.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Jean from South Dakota.
Hello, Jean. Anyone else?
Hello.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, I thought we've done shows before on the story of Terry and St. Catherine, but I've never actually picked up the book called St. Catherine's Dialogues with God. And, you know, it's 398 pages. I'm going to mute you all just a moment.
Entry and exit chimes are off. Entry chimes are off. Exit chimes are on. Entry chimes are on. Exit chimes are off.
I'm not getting that.
Entry and exit chimes are on.
I'm supposed to. How are you getting them both off?
Entry and exit chimes are off.
There we go. They're off. So, St. Catherine.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Was a young lady. See, the interesting thing to look at is when we think of people who have become famous or known in history or recognized, it's hard to realize they were human. It seems like there was something special about them. They could do things that other people couldn't do. They exhibited their talents. And what I see when I look at it myself is that someone may come into this realm that has some exceptional abilities, but until they have the right life circumstance, they may never exhibit their exceptional abilities, and they end up having a humdrum life. They die young, and so it's not to exalt somebody, because otherwise we don't want to talk about it. There's people that would exalt Terry, and I try to make myself unexaltable. So we get around that. But Terry's shy. And so if somebody starts to exalt her and think, oh, my God, I'm sitting here with St. Catherine, it's like very uncomfortable because Terry is not St. Catherine. And when she was St. Catherine, she wasn't a saint. She was probably this person that would go into a church, a monastery, and whoever, I would guess, we'll ask a few questions about this, but I would guess that whoever was in the monastery, there was someone there that could hold the space for her to bring through messages. For all I know, I could have been there. You never know. I seem to be a good space holder for that. But it was a circumstance where she was, I believe, 14 years old, and she would show up in the monastery, and somehow or another it got started. I don't know how. Somebody said, it's interesting how things get started. That's always a momentous moment. As in the story of Daphne and myself, when we were driving to Portland, and I said, does anybody want to talk to me? Keep in mind, I have known Terry for at least 30 years now. And when I first met Terry, I'll just tell you how that occurred. I was at a point where my world had fallen apart, and I needed to make money, and the way I was making money at that time was with this doing work for this fellow that had this big hotel chain, and he went bankrupt. And when he went bankrupt, all my eggs were in that basket. So I had this idea that I could do anything. I was very confident in myself. And so I said, all these people are doing multi-level marketing. So somebody had given me this tablet that said it boosted your energy. And I put it under my tongue, and I thought it worked. And I said, boy, this would be easy to sell. So I went down to a meeting of this company that was selling flower pollen, and here is this person talking at the meeting who is like so sincere and so passionate. There was no, how can I say it, multi-level marketing hype about it. She believed in the product, and she didn't look like a seasoned MLM speaker, but she really won the audience. And she kept looking at me like she wanted to get to know me. And
I kept looking at you like there's something about you.
right. Well, I didn't really respond very well at the time, but I did become a distributor for that company, ended up making a little bit of money. And, you know, I knew Terry for many, many years before I discovered she could channel. In fact, you know, I thought she was pretty wacky. Can I say that? I can say that. People, you can say I'm wacky. We're both wacky. You have to be wacky to do this. But I thought Terry was wacky, and she had all these crazy ideas. And at one point, she was fascinated with channeling, and she had discovered this woman who was holding little sessions in her home in Culver City. And Terry would go sit in her session. And one time she had Terry go up, and suddenly Terry was channeling. but I didn't see it. I wanted nothing to do with it. On a subconscious level, I was very nervous about allowing myself to become exposed to channeling, because I felt that it could tempt someone, could tempt me to give up my power. And that if a source that was channeling, and I didn't know if it was real, I didn't know there were beings in other dimensions. The only person that I ever was really influenced by was Edgar Cayce, and that's because Edgar Cayce was so validatable. I mean, he wasn't just coming through and talking about love and light. He could be so precise and so accurate, and I read many books about him with excerpts from his readings. And so if you're dealing with a positive source, they are not interested in just talking to talk. They would understand that there are a lot of, how would we say it, cautions, as we always say about channeling. And it's so easy to get a negative source or a mixed polarity source. And it often starts out with a connection with a positive source that goes sour. And they would have to look at people really carefully if they were going to decide to talk to them. And even then, they're probably still taking a risk, because they know that if you're going to go around and say, oh, we got this voice that says they're the Elohim talking to me, you've already created a hierarchy or a predisposition for someone to give up the power, because the Elohim is so highly recognized historically. It's a word that's being used. And I really couldn't quite understand why they identified themselves to me with the name Elohim. I would have probably preferred that they said they were the Council of Light. And we know other people who channel the Council of Light or the Light Brigade or whatever, and we think it's the Elohim, but they don't say it, because to them, they don't, it's not a matter of how they're named. It's a matter of how they can be of influence. That's for both people. How can they be of influence in this realm? There's a challenge to be of influence here, because, A, you have to be willing to stick your neck out, talk about things that are so out there, controversial, that challenge people's reality systems. And B, you have to be really, really very highly intended, so that you don't start out positive and end up compromised. So obviously St. Catherine was very much using, now when I say this, I don't know if it's the right way to say it, but I'll say it, the Jesus template. The Jesus template, because what I see, this is my take, and if anyone is highly religious, and that this, I don't think this is in conflict with that, but it's a different way of looking at it. And that is, according to our questions and answers, my cross references with David Walcott and Carla Ruckert, when Jesus said Father, it was the rod root that was communicating with him. And in our channeling. They said, you know, does what we call the one infinite creator is all of us. It's part of us. We are that. And so for the one infinite creator to communicate with us, it would have to separate from being the one infinite creator. Because it's all the one infinite creator. So the Elohim are aspects of the one infinite creator. You and I are aspects of the one infinite creator. And it's the subsets of the aspects that are the emissaries at whatever level they come in to hold that state. And so Jesus was an aspect of the one infinite creator and directly connected to the Ra group. And as I studied all of this, this is a whole other story, the Ra group had carefully planned this entry of Jesus into this realm. And it's not different. And this doesn't supersede the religious point of view. It includes it. It's just a little bigger. Like in religion, they don't think of reincarnation. All this stuff we're talking about is very sophisticated compared to what people could actually accept at different times. And with regard to religion, some people make connection to spirit through religion, and some people don't. The religion becomes the ends instead of the means. And as I would look at it, the Ra group was attempting to create a person who could hold the space or bring a person into this realm who could hold the space of multidimensional consciousness. They could hold the space of their chakras being open, their DNA being open, and that when someone does that, other people feel it. And they start evolving their DNA. And that's how people grow down here. They don't grow because they believe in something. They grow because they've been in the presence of fields that are higher than theirs. And those fields start to teach them how to evolve their own field. And so if Jesus was doing that, and then, of course, St. Catherine came in sometime 1366, 1300s. Well, what is she going to say that's going to be so profound? And how does it fit in with how we know the Ra group has communicated in current time? And I have the book here, and I marked a few pages. I'm not sure what page I'm going to read, but what I found was that, and now keep in mind, we have 400 pages here, and we don't know that it's all the Ra group. We don't even know that it's all positive. So you have to make your own judgment. Which means as soon as you give up your power, uh-oh, it's the Ra group, or uh-oh, it's Jesus, and you start believing everything, you've now put it in your mind, and it's not going into your heart and your system. In other words, you start following rules, you start doing rituals, and you think that's enough to quote-unquote save you. And maybe it is for some people. Maybe it works for some people. But in general, it's that aspect of human nature that wants to follow an authority instead of following their own authority. And see, it is a little complicated, because when people are growing and when they're holding a lot of negative patterns inside themselves, sometimes they have to stay pointed at something for a while to help clear their patterns. They have to stay in that field of energy until they become strong enough to hold it inside themselves. But ultimately, the goal is to have your own authority, to have your own divine connection. You know, there's something that I have talked about or discovered, and it has to, you know, the whole idea of authority. And for most of my life, I had a terrible sense of authority. I probably still do. Because it's so easy to disempower yourself and surrender to someone else. So the things that work best, the things that you can learn from to develop your own sense of authority. One thing I've learned since we've been doing these calls is, in essence, I'm the authority of these calls. I pick the topics. I decide who I can delegate anything to. And I'm in charge, because somebody's got to pay attention to things to keep them from going getting corrupted. But what I've noticed is that if I delegate something to someone, there's some people that will do everything I say and need a lot of hand-holding to do things. And there's other people that are totally independent. And I've learned that there is divine authority and there is human authority. Like if a guy owns a business, he's the authority of that business. And he decides who's going to work for him and who doesn't. If you have a home, you're the authority of your home. You decide who you let into it and who you wouldn't, in most cases. Well, that is the nature of this realm. There are domains. Everything has domains of authority. If you're living in a city, and the city has laws, you are under the domain and the authority of those laws. If you belong to a certain church, you are under that authority. So you can't get away from authority. It's part of this realm. But the key is can you operate from divine authority? Can you connect with the law of one so that even when you're under the auspices of someone else's authority, it doesn't trap you? And you can use that positioning just to be of higher service. Because some people that are working with this work we're doing do that. They're very independent. They're not depending on me. And as we talk, it's a co-creative conversation. It's not like following orders. And some people can't develop that kind of relationship. And at least they can't at this point, or right at this moment. Everyone can, ultimately. But it's a good thing to aim for. Look at your own aspect of needing authority. And if you notice our sources, not to take away your authority. And when you ask a question, they'll give a lot of information, and then they'll say, but you decide. And there's a system in that. It's one of the aspects that has developed a lot of trust between me and them, because they are that way. And I wanted to read a couple of things in St. Catherine, because if you've read The Reincarnation of Edgar Casey, and if you read the Raw Channel, it's in that, there is a similarity. They're always under, of course, the auspices of the church. So they have to honor the church and the way people have adopted Jesus as a reference point for higher connection. And yeah, if somebody does that, that's okay. I just phased out because I opened the page here. And of course, I opened a page that kind of is what we're talking about. Here we go. There are many who begin their climb so sluggishly and pay what they owe me in such bits and pieces, so indifferently and ignorantly, that they quickly fall by the way. The smallest wind makes them hoist their sails and turn back. They climbed only imperfectly to the first stair of the Christ crucified, so they never reached the second, which is that of his heart. There are others who become faithful servants. They serve me with love rather than slavish fear, which serves only for fear of punishment. But their love is imperfect, for they serve me for their own profit, or for the delight and pleasure they find in me. Do you know how they show that their love is imperfect? By the way they act when they are deprived of the comfort they find in me. And they love their neighbors with the same imperfect love. This is why their love is not strong enough to last. No, it becomes lax and often fails. It becomes lax toward me when sometimes to exercise them in virtue and to lift them up out of their imperfection, I take back my spiritual comfort and let them experience struggle and vexation. I do this to bring them to perfect knowledge of themselves so that they will know that of themselves they have neither existence nor any grace. I want them in time of conflict to take refuge in me by seeking me and knowing me as their benefactor, in true humility, seeking me alone. This is why I give them these troubles. And though I may take away their comfort, I do not take away grace. But it makes such as these grow lax, and they turn back with impatient spirit. Sometimes they slack off their exercises in all sorts of ways, often saying to themselves under pretense of virtue, this activity is not worthwhile, because they feel bereft of their selfish spiritual comfort. They act like the imperfect who have not even removed the film of spiritual selfishness from their eyes' pupil. For if they had in truth removed it, they would see everything comes from me, but not a leaf falls from the tree apart from my providence. And that I give and permit what I do for their sanctification, so that they may have the final good for which I created all of you. Now, are you there, Terry?
Yes.
Are there any further edits necessary?
No, I think it's pretty perceptive.
Now, when I read that, you know, if you go back and read the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, you know, I have a little bit of reaction when it sounds like the speaker here, whoever's speaking through, is saying stuff like, well, I'm going to make things bad for you. It's my decision. And that makes you say, who are they to make things bad for me? In the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, there was a thing that said, let's see if I can quote this. You get lessons, and when you learn your lessons, you move on to the next step. But if you haven't learned the lesson, you get increased catalyst, and things get tougher. And if you don't learn the lesson at that point, it gets even worse because there's a certain energy you're putting out. And things keep getting worse until you change the energy. And the log loop is part of our energetic flow into higher dimensions, as I see it. Let me try another one here. There's another place where they talk about the church. Okay, here's a good little section. You notice how this sounds different from the Elohim. They ought to know themselves enough to consider themselves unworthy of the tremendous mystery they have received to be. But they do just the opposite. For bloated with pride as they are, they never have their fill of gobbling up earthly riches and the pleasures of the world while they are stingy, greedy, and avarice towards the poor. Because of this wretched pride and avarice born of their sensual selfishness, they have abandoned the care of souls and give themselves over completely to guarding and caring for their temporal possessions. They leave behind my sheep, whom I had entrusted to them, like sheep without a shepherd. They neither pasture nor feed them, either spiritually or materially. Spiritually, they do administer the sacraments of the Holy Church, the power of which sacraments can neither be taken away nor lessened by any idea of sin of theirs. But they do not feed them with sincere prayers, with hungry longing for their salvation, with holy and honorable living. Nor do they feed their poor subjects with temporal assistance. Listen to some of those words again. I want to repeat that. Hungry longing for their salvation. Hungry longing for their salvation. Think of the people around you. Could you say that you have hungry longing for their salvation? Could you say that you could make a difference to those people so they can graduate? Are you letting them know you care? It's really an amazing thing to say. Hungry longing for their salvation. I told you they were to distribute their material goods in three portions, one for their own needs, one for the poor, and one for the use of the church. But these do the opposite. Not only do they not give what they are in duty bound to give to the poor, but they rob them through simony, I don't know what that means, and they're hankering after money, selling the grace of the Holy Spirit. Some are so mean that they are unwilling to give to the needy the very things I have given them freely so that they might give them to you. Unless their hands are filled with money or they are plentifully supplied with gifts in return. They love their subjects for what they can get from them and no more. They spend all the goods of the church on nothing but clothes for their body. They go about fancily dressed, not like clerics and religious, but like lords or court lackeys. They are concerned about having grand horses, gold and silver, and well-adorned homes. Now, keep in mind, they seem to be addressing here those people that have positions in the church and supporting themselves in a very high lifestyle from their church positions. They have and keep what they ought not, all with huge vanity. Their heart babbles out its disordered vanity, and their whole desire is feasting, making a god of their bellies, eating and drinking inordinately. So they soon fall into impure and lustful living. Woe, woe to their wretched lives. They devour the souls who were bought with Christ's blood, eating them up in so many wretched ways and feeding their own children with what belongs to the poor. O, you temples of the devil, I appointed you to be earthly angels in this life, but you are devils who have taken up the devil's work. The devils dispense darkness from what is theirs and administer excruciating torment with their vexations, with their vexatious temptations. They lure souls away from grace to drag them down to the guilt of deadly sin. They exert every effort they can in this, although no sin can touch the soul who does not want it. They nevertheless do all they can. Thus, these wretches, unworthy of being called ministers, are devils incarnate. For by their sins they have patterned themselves after the devil. They perform their task of administering me, the true light, out of darkness of deadly sin. And they administer to their subjects and to others the darksomeness of their perverted and evil lives. They are the cause of confusion and suffering to the spirits of those who see their disorderly living. Indeed, they are the cause of confusion and suffering to the consciences of those who succeed in dragging down from the state of grace and the way of truth. For by leading them into sin, they make them walk in the way of falsehood. But those who follow them do not, in fact, have an excuse for their sin. For no one could be forced into deadly sin either by these visible devils or the invisible ones. No one taught to give attention to their lives or copied what they do. Still, as my truth admonished you in the Holy Gospel, you should do as they tell you. This is the teaching given you in the mystic body of the Holy Church, born in Holy Scripture, and brought to you by my trumpeters, the preachers, whose duty is to proclaim my word. But the woe that is their just desert and their evil lives, you are not to imitate, nor are you to punish them, for in that you would offend them. Leave them their evil lives, and take for yourselves their teaching, and leave their punishment to me, for I am the gentle, eternal God, and I reward everything good and punish every sin. the dignity of being my ministers will not save them from my punishment. Indeed, unless they change their ways, they will be punished more severely than all the others, because they have received more from my kindness. Having sinned so miserably, they are deserving of greater punishment. So you see how they are devils. Just as I told you that my chosen ones are angels on earth and do the work of angels. All right. Pretty intense. And 7:45. We don't have a lot of time. And now again, remember, when you have multidimensional consciousness speaking, you have different places coming on. But here is the source that created this church in order to lift people's souls, and finding that the people that were leaving it are not doing a very good job. And of course, this work is still recognized by the Vatican, who may be in that same league of the pomp and circumstance. And but I don't want to go any further over the deep edge on this. I'm just going to quickly see if we have any comments from our sources. And I probably went too long to get into this deeply. But I thought it was very enlightening to hear how this information was given through St. Catherine. There's ways that it corresponds to the raw material and the Wilcox material. I can see the resonance. And Father, Mother, God, we're going to do this really fast. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the light to surround and protect Terry, myself, and everyone listening. Any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy coming from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through our bodies, and into the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us. We create a protected space that only the positive is accessed. And anything not of that nature must leave there. And we have our sources wanting to say hello to us and make any comments if they choose.
Thank you. We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. We make contact with your group, each and every one who is listening or will listen in the future or will read a transcript. And it is our heartfelt thanks and appreciation that individuals are listening. And we thank the technology that we may get words out to a larger group of people. And we thank Wynn and Terry and Daphne for bringing this opportunity to the front. And we thank people in the group and people that have been working in whatever occupation or job they have to bring such information to the public, to individuals. There is another side. There is a home. And in the home base, when one is overly concerned about the pleasures of the earth plane and holding on to them, it is sometimes a shock when they lose these things. It isn't that having these things is wrong. It is that knowing that they are temporal and they are passing, and that the true fulfillment comes at a deeper level. These accoutrements to life make life easier. And then when one, give us a moment. When one puts all of their faith and all of their effort and their attention in hopes and joys and hopes of fulfillment in something that is so passing and fleeting, that when they move to the higher dimension and they cannot take these things with them that they have come to enjoy and move into the higher enjoyments in the other side, the more balanced attributes that can be had in the other side. And when one is in the earth realm and can balance love and caring for individuals rather than greediness and hopes and joys in the very temporal and passing things, without opening their heart, then this can lead the individual into suffering when they pass to the other side. Those are some of our initial comments. Do you have questions? We cannot hear you.
We don't have any more questions tonight because we have to bring this to a close, and maybe we'll ask some more questions next week on the connection between St. Catherine and what I believe to be the same sources that are communicating to us. And thank you so much for coming forth and trusting us with this dispensation of doing this, and we would just say good evening for tonight and thank everyone who's on the call and everyone listening, and we look forward to those of you that return on Wednesday when we will be submitting your questions.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.